Hello, friends, and welcome to Stand to Reason. I'm Greg Kokel, and I am not here. I don't mean I'm not here, like, mentally. I mean, that's sometimes the case, but I'm just not here. And what I mean by that is I'm not here today, the day that I normally broadcast, to make this episode on the day that I'm normally broadcasting this show. I'm in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I'm doing an event there, and I'm not here. So I'm doing a special show to play during this time. So you'll have something, and I will not leave you as orphans. Instead, I will provide something for you to think about. And on this show, I'm going to do something I almost never do, and that is I'm going to read something that I think is so well-written and so impressive in that regard and so insightful and such a significant clarion warning to our culture that has ramifications for us as followers of Christ. I think it's worth reading the entire thing without actually much commentary, all right? And to introduce the relationship of this piece, which was not written by a Christian, but rather by a college professor, and not an American, but a Canadian, I want to read another citation from a Christian who's a, among other things, a broadcaster, and I've been on a show before. In fact, I did a three-hour debate with atheist Michael Shermer on Hugh Hewitt's national radio broadcast a number of years ago. But he wrote a great little book that I highly recommend for Christians who are in high school especially, because it has some recommendations about what university you go to, that is meant to give his wisdom, which is substantial, about how to position one's life as a follower of Christ in a professional world to have the most impact for Christ. And the book is simply titled In, But Not Of. In, But Not Of. And he's trying to help you get in there, in the world, in a significant way that even though you're not of the world, you can have an impact on the world for Christ. I highly recommend it. It's probably written 20 years ago. But the first paragraph or so has a statement in it that I've cited a number of times because it's so, to me, compelling. It's not, in a sense, profound. It's obvious, although sometimes the most profound observations are obvious when you think about them. And here's what he says there in the opening paragraphs of In, But Not Of. He says, the effective and mass communication of the gospel depends upon the freedom to proclaim it. The effective and mass communication of the gospel depends upon the freedom to proclaim it. Obviously so. And this is why, I think, one of the reasons why Paul tells Christians to pray in 1 Timothy chapter 1, or maybe it's chapter 2. I think it is chapter 2. To pray for our leaders so that we can live a peaceful life in all dignity, because that kind of life makes it easiest for us to live out our Christian convictions in a compelling way and have an influence on other people by communicating the truth of the gospel to them. Now, if you think of totalitarian regimes, either past or present, the Soviet regime, still somewhat totalitarian, not Soviet. Now it's broken up into the individual countries, but many have the characteristics of the old Soviet socialist republics. And there's a de facto totalitarianism in many aspects, not as bad as it used to be, but communist China like that. The Third Reich was like that. The fascism of Italy in the last century like that, etc., etc. We know what happens when totalitarianism sets in, and that is the gospel gets throttled. Now, I don't mean at all to suggest that the totalitarian pressures against freedom and therefore against the proclamation of the gospel went out, because the gates of hell will not prevail against God's church, Jesus' church, communicating the gospel in whatever circumstance they find themselves in. And there was a mixture of freedom and oppression even for the early church. Oppression early on by the Jews, and then oppression by various emperors for the first 400 years of Christianity, until Christianity became a legal religion under Constantine. By the way, Constantine did not make Christianity the religion of the realm. He simply made it legal. And when it was made legal, of course, then it proliferated even more. And so there's the general principle there. And last year, I wrote a lot about how in this country we are seeing a rise of totalitarian practices that is frightening to people who came from those countries that I just described, Soviet bloc, former Soviet bloc emigres from the former Soviet bloc, let me put it that way, who have come to the United States and see what's happening. And they are shocked and deeply disturbed. And so I've written about that all last year on my Solid Grounds, most of the issues. And many of you are familiar, I talked about it here. Well, there has been an individual that has been quite outspoken about this pattern, not just in not just in our country, but in Canada, where he is from. His name is Jordan Peterson, author of a very popular best-selling book, 12 Rules for Life. And this is a book that gives rules for life that are wise. Lots of wisdom here, not nonsense. And a lot of the kind of self-help books you buy nowadays are filled with nonsense. But not this one. It's a thick book, too. I haven't read it because I bought it, and then it was too big. I didn't have time. In any event, Jordan Peterson from University of Toronto, where I think he's professor of psychology or something to that effect. In any event, he became well-known because of his willingness to stand up to the left. And just in his own circles, he wasn't trying to start a movement or anything, but particularly stand up with regards to the whole gender narrative. And in his university, he was being required to use the preferred pronouns of the individuals based on their self-perception, gender self-perception. And he said, no, I'm not going to do it. And of course, he got a lot of heat. But this is one person that has stood tall in the sense that he does not apologize for doing things that weren't wrong. And therefore, he's gotten tremendous heat, but also inspired a massive number of people to stand tall and, as Rod Dreher puts it in the title of his book, Live Not by Lies. He has recently resigned as a tenured professor from the University of Toronto, where I've spoken before, but I have never met him. And by the way, just as an aside, there's a lot that he has talked about regarding Jesus in the last couple of years. He's very taken with Jesus and with things that C.S. Lewis has said about him, that Jesus, that the resurrection is a myth that really happened, the true myth. And he's done some videos where he's talked about this, and he's moved to tears in the videos as he's talking about Jesus. So I'm not entirely sure what's going on in his private, personal, spiritual life, but in any event, it's moving in a good direction. And I don't know how much that's change in his spiritual convictions now have informed his resistance to these new developments, these narratives that are contrary to truth. My suspicion is he was doing this before, but in any event, just as an aside, Jordan Peterson wrote a piece on January 19th titled "Why I'm No Longer a Tenured Professor at the University of Toronto," subtitled "The Appalling Ideology of Diversity, Inclusion, and Equity is Demolishing Education and Business." Now, I want to read this to you. I'm just going to read the whole thing. It's that good. But the point I want to make is I want it to be clear why I'm doing this, because he's talking about patterns in our culture that are not good for liberty. Because of the number of people who are being persuaded by a false ideology that is not just being spoken but being enforced, and those who differ are being silenced. And this is thick in the university, that is university, the academy system in both his country and ours, that is training the next generation of thinkers and leaders. And so this is going to have a long, and is having, as we've seen this pattern, not just in the last year or two, but in the last 10, 15, 20 years, this particular pattern developing and reaching a crescendo. And now many of the people trained by the universities are in the business world, and they are advancing ideologies that ironically are in long-term invidious to those businesses, but nevertheless, they are the narrative that is being enforced. And there's danger in that, not just for Canadians, not just for Americans, but for Christians. Because again, as Hugh Hewitt has put it, the effective and mass communication of the gospel depends upon the freedom to proclaim it. So with that introduction in mind, let me read from Jordan Peterson, "Why I Am No Longer a Tenured Professor at the University of Toronto." He writes, "I recently resigned from my position as full tenured professor at the University of Toronto. I am now Professor Emeritus, and before I turned 60. Emeritus is generally a designation reserved for superannuated faculty, albeit those who had served their term with some distinction. I had envisioned teaching and researching at the University of Toronto full-time until they had to haul my skeleton out of the office. I loved my job, and my students, undergraduates and graduates alike, were positively predisposed toward me. But that career path was not meant to be. There were many reasons, including the fact that I can now teach many more people and with less interference online. But here's a few more. First, my qualified and supremely trained heterosexual white male graduate students, and I've had many others, by the way, face a negligible chance of being offered university research positions despite stellar scientific dossiers." And I'm pausing here. Let me just read, he's qualifying, because this group he just qualified is the kind of the most persona non grata group around because of this new narrative. "My qualified and supremely trained heterosexual white male graduate students face a negligible chance of being offered university research positions despite stellar scientific dossiers. This is partly because of diversity, inclusivity, and equity mandates, my preferred acronym, DIE. And just so you know, friends, we've talked about CRT, critical race theory. That acronym is now passé. They don't use the acronym anymore because it's come under fire. They've just migrated the material underneath a different acronym, DIE or DEI, diversity, inclusivity, and equity, or diversity, equity, and inclusivity. So you'll see these in different forms. Anyway, he's identifying the DIE. These have been imposed universally in academia, despite the fact that university hiring committees had already done everything reasonable for all the years of my career, and then some, to ensure that no qualified minority candidates were ever overlooked. My students are also partly unacceptable precisely because they are my students. I am academic persona non grata because of my unacceptable philosophical positions. And this isn't just some inconvenience. These facts rendered my job morally untenable. How can I accept prospective researchers and train them in good conscience, knowing their employment prospects to be minimal? Second reason. This is one of many issues of appalling ideology currently demolishing the universities and downstream the general culture. Not least because there simply is not enough qualified BIPOC people, there's another acronym for you, in the pipeline to meet diversity targets quickly enough. Now, that acronym stands for Black, Indigenous, and People of Color, for those of you not in the knowing woke, he says parenthetically. Okay, BIPOC would be Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. And that's his point, is that's who they're looking to fill the posts. He says there's not enough qualified to fill the posts. He continues, this has been common knowledge among any remotely truthful academic who has served on hiring committee for the last three decades. This means we're out to produce a generation of researchers utterly unqualified for the job. And we've seen what that means already in the horrible grievance studies disciplines. That, combined with the death of objective testing, has compromised the university so badly that it can hardly be overstated. And what happens in the universities eventually colors everything, as we have discovered. All my craven colleagues must craft DIE statements to obtain a research grant. They all lie, excepting the minority of true believers. And they, in other words, those that don't lie are the ones that actually believe what they're saying, but that's a minority. And they teach their students to do the same. And they do it constantly with various rationalizations and justifications, further corrupting what is already a stunningly corrupt enterprise. Some of my colleagues even allow themselves to undergo so-called anti-bias training conducted by supremely unqualified human resources personnel, lecturing inanely and blithely and in an accusatory manner about theoretically all-pervasive racist, sexist, heterosexist attitudes. Such training is now often a precondition to occupy a faculty position on a hiring committee. Need I point out that implicit attitudes cannot, by the definitions generated by those who have made them a central point of our culture, be transformed by short-term explicit training? In other words, these training things aren't going to do any good to change these attitudes if they exist, is what he's saying. He continues, assuming that those biases exist in the manner claimed, and that is a very weak claim, and I'm speaking scientifically here. The implicit association test, the much vaunted IAT, which purports to objectively diagnose implicit bias, that's automatic racism and the like, is by no means powerful enough, valid, and reliable enough to do what it purports to do. Two of the original designers of that test, Anthony Greenwald and Brian Nosek, have said as much publicly. The third, Professor Mazarian Banaji of Harvard, remains recalcitrant. In other words, he's a true believer, I guess. Much of this can be attributed to her overtly leftist political agenda, as well as to her embeddedness within a subdiscipline of psychology, social psychology, so corrupt that it denied the existence of left-wing authoritarianism for six decades after World War II. The same social psychologists, broadly speaking, also casually regard conservatism in the guise of system justification as a form of Banaji's continued countenancing of the misuse of her research instrument combined. Oh, I'm sorry, I missed something here. My apologies here. These same social psychologists also regard conservatism as psychopathology. Okay. Banaji's continued countenancing of the misuse of her research instrument, which is meant to find racism everywhere, apparently, combined with the status of her position at Harvard, is a prime reason we still suffer of the DIE yoke, with its baleful effect on what was once the closest we had ever come to truly meritorious selection. There are good reasons to suppose that DIE-motivated eradication of objective testing, such as the GRE, graduate graduate school admission test is what that amounts to. Will have the eradication of those tests will have deleterious effects on the ability of all students so selected to master such topics as the statistics of all social sciences and medicine, for that matter, rely upon completely for their validity. Okay, so this is a self-destructive enterprise, he's saying. Furthermore, the accrediting boards for graduate clinical psychology training programs in Canada are now planning to refuse to accredit university clinical programs unless they have a social justice orientation. That, combined with some recent legislative changes in Canada claiming to outlaw so-called conversion therapy but really making it exceedingly risky for clinicians to do anything ever but agree always and about everything with their clients. Let me stop for a moment. Basically, what's happened in the psychology profession, and this is his field, is that instead of trying to find out what's wrong with a person psychologically and repairing that, called sometimes conversion therapy, their job is just now to help them feel better about whatever condition they have. That's his complaint. All right. And it makes it risky for any clinicians to ever say anything is wrong in the way people are thinking or acting. Okay. And he continues then in saying that attitude has likely doomed the practice of clinical psychology, which always depended entirely on trust and privacy. This is an intrusion into that field, he says. Similar moves are afoot in other professional disciplines such as medicine and law. And if you don't think that psychologists, lawyers, and other professionals are anything but terrified of their now woke governing professional colleges, much to everyone's extreme detriment, you simply don't understand how far this has all gone. Okay. Now, he's identifying, by the way, something I have seen in a lot of different areas. That is, if you're a Christian and you want to go into any of these fields, there are professional restrictions based on a certain narrative and philosophy regarding reality that influences the field, psychology, therapy, economics, sociology, law, medicine even, that if you don't walk in lockstep with these destructive ideas, they won't even let you into the educational program. Or if you survive the program, you won't get into a professional organization, which in many of these disciplines is required for you to be successful as a professional there. That's the point he's making. And he said, if you don't see that, you simply don't understand how far this has all gone. I continue. Just exactly what am I supposed to do when I meet a graduate student or a young professor hired on DIE grounds? Manifest instant skepticism regarding their professional ability? What a slap in the face to a truly meritorious young outsider. And perhaps that's the point. The DIE ideology is not friend to peace and tolerance. It is absolutely and completely the enemy of competence and justice. And for those of you who think I'm overstating the case, or that this is something limited in some trivial sense to the universities, consider some other examples. This report from Hollywood, clinched hotbed of liberal sentiment, for example, indicates just how far this has gone. In 2020, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, this is the Oscar people, embarked on a 5-year plan. And then he says, does that ring any historical bells? For those of you unfamiliar with his reference, this is this was the plan that followed the Russian Revolution. First 5-year plan, second 5-year plan, third 5-year plan. If you read Orwell's Animal Farm, you see characterizations of it in that allegory. In any event, the Academy Award folk embarked on a 5-year plan to diversify our organization and expand our definition of the best, close quote. In other words, that's from the Oscar crowd saying that. They did so in an attempt which included developing, quote, new representation and inclusion standards for Oscars, close quote, to hypothetically, quote, better reflect the diversity of the movie-going audience, close quote. In other words, you're not, this is my comment now, you're not being judged on how good of an actor or filmmaker you are. You're being judged on diversity. The Oscars are being judged more and more by diversity, equity, inclusion and equity, DIE. Okay. He continues, what fruit has this initiative, offspring of the DIE ideology, born? According to a recent article penned by Peter Kiefer and Peter Sovodnik, but posted on former New York Times journalist Barry Weiss's Common Sense website, and Weiss left the Times because of the intrusion of radical left ideology into that newspaper, just as Tara Henley did recently vis-a-vis the CBC. And here's the citation then from these two men. Now have to report this on Barry Weiss's website, I'm saying. Here's the citation that he cites. We spoke to more than 25 writers, directors, and producers, all of whom identify as liberal and all of whom described a pervasive fear of running afoul of the new dogma. How to survive the revolution? By becoming its most ardent supporter. Suddenly, every conversation with every agent or head of content started with, is anyone BIPOC attached to this? Close quote. And this is everywhere, Peterson writes. And if you don't see it, your head is either in the sand or shoved. Well, I won't say this. CBS, for example, has literally mandated that every writer's room be at least 40% BIPOC. Black, Indigenous, or people of color in 2021. 50% in 2022. We are now at the point where race, ethnicity, so-called gender, or sexual preference is first accepted as the fundamental characteristic defining each person, just as the radical leftists were hoping, and second is now treated as the most important qualification for study, research, and employment. Need I point out that this is insane? Even the benighted New York Times has its doubts. A headline from August 11, 2021. Are workplace diversity programs doing more harm than good? In a word, yes. How could accusing your employees of racism, etc., sufficient to require retraining, particularly in relationship to those who are working in good faith to overcome whatever bias they might still in these modern liberal times manifest, be anything other than insulting? Annoying, invasive, high-handed, moralizing, inappropriate, ill-considered, counterproductive, and otherwise unjustifiable. Now, as my aside here, this is a point I've made many times, and especially in an encouragement for Christians or anybody for that matter who are being forced into these re-education programs to ask the question, why do you as my employer have the right to force me to be re-educated according to your politics as a condition of my continued employment? And you know what they say? Well, we're trying to create more peace and harmony in our community. But of course, it's doing just the opposite. It's insulting, annoying, invasive, high-handed, inappropriate, ill-considered, counterproductive, and unjustifiable in Jordan Peterson's words. He continues, and if you think DIE is bad, wait until you get a load of environmental, social, and governance, ESG scores. Purporting to assess corporate moral responsibility, these scores, which can dramatically affect an enterprise's financial viability, are nothing less than the equivalent of China's damnable social credit system applied to the entrepreneurial and financial world. CEOs, what in the world is wrong with you? Can't you see that the ideologues who push such appalling nonsense are driven by an agenda that is not only absolutely antithetical to your free market enterprise as such, but precisely targeted at the freedoms that made your success possible? Can't you see that by going along sheep-like, just as the professors are doing, just as the artists and writers are doing, that you are generating a veritable fifth column within your businesses? Are you really so blind, cowed, and cowardly with all your so-called privilege? And it's not just the universities, he continues, and the professional colleges, and Hollywood, and the corporate world. Diversity, inclusivity, and equity, that radical leftist trinity, is destroying us. Wondering about the divisiveness that is currently besetting us? Look no farther than DIE. Wondering more specifically about the attractiveness of Trump? Look no further than DIE. When does the left go too far? When they worship at the altar of DIE and insist that the rest of us, who mostly want to be left alone, do so as well. Enough already. Enough. Enough. Finally, do you know that Vladimir Putin himself is capitalizing on this woke madness? Anna Majar Barducci at MEMRI.org covered his recent speech. I quote from the article's translation. So this now is a quote from Putin himself reflecting on this madness. And here's what Putin says. The advocates of so-called social progress believe they are introducing humanity to some kind of a new and better consciousness. Godspeed, hoist the flags, as we say, go right ahead. The only thing that I want to say now is that their prescriptions are not new at all. It may come as a surprise to some people, but Russia has been there already. After the 1917 revolution, the Bolsheviks, relying on the dogmas of Marx and Engels, also said that they would change existing ways and customs, and not just political and economic ones, but the very notion of human morality and the foundations of a healthy society. The destruction of age-old values, religion, and relations between people, up to and including the total rejection of family. We had that too. This is Putin now. Remember, this is Putin speaking. Encouragement to inform on loved ones. All this was proclaimed progress and, by the way, was widely supported around the world back then and was quite fashionable, same as today. By the way, the Bolsheviks were absolutely intolerant of opinions other than theirs. That all was a citation from Putin himself. By the way, it continues. This, I believe, Putin says, should call to mind some of what we are witnessing now. Look at what is happening in a number of Western countries. We are amazed to see the domestic practices, which we fortunately have left, I hope, in the distant past. The fight for equality and against discrimination has turned into aggressive dogmatism bordering on absurdity. When the works of the great authors of the past, such as Shakespeare, are no longer taught at schools or universities because their ideas are believed to be backward, the classics are declared backward and ignorant of the importance of gender or race. In Hollywood, memos are distributed about proper storytelling and how many characters of what color or gender should be in a movie. This is even worse than the agitprop department of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. Close quote. That all Vladimir Putin, as he's reflecting on what's happening here. Go ahead. Hoist the flags. Godspeed. We've been there, done that. We're trying to move away from that. But look at you guys, what you're doing. Just what we did. So now I continue here with the final paragraphs of Jordan Peterson. This from the head of the former totalitarian enterprise against whom we fought a 5-decades-long Cold War, risking the entire planet in a very real manner. Mad, mutually, how does that go, mad? Total destruction, whatever it was. This from the head of a country given, riven in a literally genocidal manner by ideas that Putin himself attributes to the progressives in the West, to the generally accepting audience of his once burned, twice shy listeners. And all of you going along with the DIE activist, whatever your reasons, this is on you. Professors cowering cravenly in pretense and silence, teaching your students to dissimulate and lie to get along as the walls crumble. For shame. CEOs signaling a virtue you don't possess and shouldn't want to please a minority who literally live their lives by displeasure. You're evil capitalists, after all. You should be proud of it. At the moment, I can't tell if you're more reprehensibly timid even than the professors. Why don't you banish the human resource DIE upstarts back to the more appropriately named personnel departments? Stop them from interfering with the psyches of you and your employees and be done with it. Musicians, artists, writers, stop bending your sacred and meritorious art to the demands of the propagandists before you fatally betray the spirit of your own intuition. Stop censoring your thought. Stop saying you will hire for your orchestral and theatrical productions for any reason other than talent and excellence. That's all you have. That's all any of us have. And Peterson's final line, quoting the prophet here, he who sows the wind will reap the whirlwind, and the wind is rising. So that's the end of Peterson's piece. You can find it online. If you want to go back over that material, very compelling. I learned nothing new in reading that piece, and maybe some of you the same, but I suspect most of you have not realized how bad this has gotten. That at so many levels of our culture, we have been overtaken by a hideous ideology that threatens our freedom. And if it threatens our freedom, it threatens our ability to be good Christians. And being good Christians means living a certain way and speaking a certain message. I have not read anything of this shorter length, as opposed to a book, that has more clearly identified how deep the threat goes. So much so that even Putin can see what's going on and laugh at it and deride it and at least claim that that's where they were, and now they are trying to move away. Whether you believe that or not is another matter. Reason to be concerned. I think it was Jesus who talked about reading the signs of the times. Or maybe Paul, I think both made reference to it one way or another, but this is something that wise Christians do. We have to see the way the world really is in order to muster our, I don't want to say forces because that is might suggest something I don't mean. Muster our strategy, our willingness to stand tall against really what amounts to the schemes of the devil. Machinations, strategies, things the devil has put in place to destroy those things in the world that God has ordained for the purpose of human flourishing. This isn't the first time I've talked about this. Won't be the last. But I hope this piece by Peterson will be a bit of a wake-up call to some of you as to what we're actually facing. Do not forget, the gates of hell shall not prevail against Christ's church. But we have had it easy in this country as Christians compared to the way Christians have lived for 2,000 years or much of those 2,000 years, and certainly even now in other parts of the world. They have it much more difficult. And we will be facing, most certainly, as these trends continue, increasing difficulty ourselves, and genuine persecution for not just practicing our convictions, but even believing our convictions. That's the direction things are going. A lot to think about there, and I hope I got you thinking. I'm Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.